We all please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Kevin, can I ask you to lead us, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I would like to welcome everyone who are coming here this evening to, for the Bill Igel for Governor meet and greet right here in the heart of Owensville, Missouri. I thank Snowensville for letting us have this event here today. We also thank them for providing lemonade as well. I want to thank Swiss Meats for the providing for the donation of the meat tray. And we got some wine over there from a local purchase from a local winery, and some that that Jeannie over there purchased locally as well. And of course, Bill, we got some Bill Igel cookies made right
Bill
up the street.
Igel cookies.
I put some back for you.
Bill Igel cookies. You know you've arrived when you get Bill Igel cookies. This is fantastic.
So we kept it pretty local, just like we want to keep our farmland in the state of Missouri, right?
That's right.
We got some guests that I'd like to introduce you to that brought me to talk radio of them residing in Owensville, which Bill has been a guest on their show a couple times. So, Sam, would you rise up and tell them about your show off the cuff, please?
Yeah,
a couple
absolutely.
Minutes.
Sure. We do a broadcast called Off the Cuff. It's on Wednesday nights. Just moved it to Wednesday nights in case some were listening and were confused. That just happened here within the past week or so. But anyway, we're on Missouri Liberty Radio, which is a station that I run here out of Owensville. You can find it online at molibertyradio.us. That's M-O is in Missouri, and then Liberty Radio, all lowercase. The whole thing is lowercase. molibertyradio.us. And there's a button right on the front page where you can listen to what we broadcast, and there's something on there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But if you want to hear what we're doing locally here from Owensville, my show, it's from 6 to 9 p.m. Wednesday evenings. And then if you missed that one, then there's a Sunday run of it where we used to be. I just stuck the replay over there where we used to be. And that's also from 6 to 9 on Sunday nights. So you got two grabs at it on Wednesday and Sunday. And then on Mondays, we run it during the day at 1 p.m. So there's three shots at it. And then, of course, we make archives available that you can download as well. And there's no subject we don't touch. In fact, a couple of weeks from now, I just booked an interview with probably one of the two last remaining survivors from the USS Liberty, which was attacked.
Proceed to supplemental.
Anyway, the one of the few survivors from the USS Liberty, which was attacked, and unfortunately our government covered it up, as well as the Israeli government, both of them covered it up. This was back in 1967, and so we're very, very blessed to have one of those survivors on, and he's going to be on the 19th. The reason I bring that up is because we try to get a lot of these people on subjects that are not talked about, and there's a lot of history there that unfortunately gets glossed over. And these veterans were told for years if they dare speak out about it, they would get horrendous repercussions from the U.S. government. So they just quietly paid them off and told them they couldn't speak about it. Well, some of them are speaking about it now, so we're going to have one of them on the 19th. And amidst everything else, you know, we've interviewed Bill Igel. Bill Igel's been on our show several times. We just try to cover just anything the mainstream media doesn't cover, we try to cover. So if you want to hear some good provocative talk radio, Wednesday nights from 6 to 9, Sunday nights the replay from 6 to 9, and if you miss those, Monday at 1 p.m., 1 p.m., and then if you miss all of that, you can download it as an MP3 file and listen on demand. So we pretty well got it covered, and we'd love to have you guys not only listen but participate. We take calls, so it's probably one of the nicest community get-togethers we have here in the state. No commercials, 3 hours. We all just we cover news, and then we take calls, and people call in and comment on stuff. So we'd love to have any of you that, if you didn't know about the show before, we'd love to have you as a new listener, and love to hear from you.
Thank you, Sam.
You bet.
Would you say the name again, please? Would you say the name again, please?
My name is Sam Britton.
No, the Missouri Liberty.
Oh, Missouri Liberty Radio is the station. Locally here in town, it's at 101.3. And on the internet, you just go to M-O Liberty Radio. That's all lowercase. M-O, as in Missouri. And then Liberty, L-I-B-E-R-T-Y. And then radio, R-A-D-I-O. US.
Thank you.
You betcha.
I missed a couple people. I want to say thank you. Thank you, Cheryl Bowl and Jeannie, for helping me this day. Anybody else that I may have missed, thank you for helping me get the word out today. I very much appreciate it. And I would like to make this as simple as possible. So if we got any other candidates, you're not going to get me this time, Bill. Other candidates running for election or re-election in 2024, would you take a brief moment and stand up and introduce yourselves?
Just I'm Lori Rook. I'm running for Missouri State Treasurer. I'm from the Springfield area. And I am running because I want to bring transparency to the office. I want to expose where your money's really going. We have a huge budget, and I want to put it all out there for us. And I want us to be more proactive so that we can essentially reduce the amount we're spending. So check out my website, and I've got some materials out there. And thank you for giving me a few seconds to introduce myself.
No problem.
Jerry Larimore, I'm running for Southern District Commissioner. I am the commissioner as of now in the Southern District. I want to continue. I work hard at it. I'm very conservative. I've watched the money. We've always have a balanced budget, and I appreciate anyone's support. If anybody has any questions of me, I'll be around tonight too. So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer. Thank you.
One of the very many things that I respect about Bill, which he'll tell you all about later, is he's a veteran. So if we got any veterans in the house, could I get you to stand up and be recognized, please? If we got any police, fire, EMS, or any other first responders, would you please stand up and be recognized, please? Well, I don't know what you all came in here thinking tonight, but I hope you all are thinking the same thing that I am. I think it's time for a new governor in the state of Missouri. Yeah. I think it's time for a governor that's not afraid to stand to the liberals in the swamp we have in Jefferson City. Yeah. I think it's time for a governor that's not afraid to tell the liberals in the swamp to just go pound sand. Yeah. I think it's time for a governor that doesn't believe China or any other foreign entity should own one square inch of farmland here in Missouri. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's time for a governor that truly believes in a balanced budget. Yeah. I think it's time for a governor that is truly ready or not afraid to cut taxes.
Yeah.
I truly believe in cut taxes. And I think it's time for a governor that doesn't truly work for the special interest in the lobbyists we have in Jeff City, but truly works for the people of the state of Missouri. And I don't know about you all, but I think we got that guy, that candidate, right here in the heart of Owensville tonight. Bill will be taking questions after his stump speech, and I'll just say, as he said the last time he was in Owensville, there's nothing off limits. I'm told he'll go all night if you'll let him.
I will filibuster. I like to talk.
So, can you do 41 hours here tonight?
Was it 51
Let's
or 41?
Let's not test it.
I got one more thing. I know you all did not come here to hear me talk this evening, but I would like to share one more personal story of mine that Bill was involved in. And it goes along with what I just had recently said. You know, I got a call from Bill's chief of staff, who's here tonight, which I did not expect. It was very appreciative. I'm glad he believed in me. But during that time, it was a time I was going through a very worrisome, probably one of the most worried times of my life. Within minutes after getting off the phone with his chief of staff, I got a text from Bill. Well, let me back up a little bit and just say that my mother was in a very a surgery that we didn't know the outcome, how it was going to be. And I got a text from Bill to let me know that my mom was in his prayers and he was thinking about her. So I already knew how much Bill really cared about the people of Missouri, but that showed it even more so. So I will say that.
She's doing great.
She's right over there.
Hey, there you go.
Thank you. I didn't want to embarrass her. I can honestly say about the same thing about our Senator Ben Brown as well. I just want to take this time and say publicly for all those who reached out to me during this time. I believe by the good grace of God and by the prayers everybody did, my mother is still with us here today. So without further ado, with the help of the people and the grassroots movement, your next elected governor of Missouri, Bill Igel.
All right, welcome everybody. Brandon, thank you so much for that, brother. I'm so glad to be here, and I'm so glad to see everybody. This is my eighth event in the past day and a half. The eighth event, and we've got two more tomorrow. We've got another one on Sunday. I have put almost 70,000 miles on my truck driving around this state. This is my second visit to Owensville, the second event you put on for me in the great town of Owensville, and I'm glad to be here. What a beautiful evening, and I can't believe it's been almost a year since I've been here, since the last time we got together and chatted, and it seems like a lot has changed, but a lot has stayed the same. And since I think the last time I spoke to y'all, I put another 30,000 miles on my truck. Driven through more towns, visited more Republicans, and got more of the same feedback from those Republicans saying that they're not happy. They're frustrated. They're disappointed. And you know, the most recent, my final legislative session in the Missouri Senate didn't do anything to change that opinion from a lot of Republicans. We continue to see what I refer to as Groundhog Day in Jefferson City. Groundhog Day, where you see the same thing. Over and over and over. Republicans telling you that they're going to do something, and what happens?
Nothing.
And that frustration, that anger, it's building up all over the state, and I think it's going to absolutely explode on August 6th. Yeah. We're going to elect, not just in the governor's office, but we're going to elect a slate of Republicans that the swamp down there in Jefferson City can't even imagine right now. They can't even get their head around the idea that they're going to have a group of elected Republicans that no longer work for them, and we're going to actually start taking our state back and leading this country. So, my message for you tonight, if you're one of those disaffected, disappointed, frustrated, angry, ready to go burn it all down Republicans, I want you to know, you're not alone. You're not alone. There are millions of Republicans in this state, just like you, that are going to do something amazing on August 6th. In fact, we're not just going to take our state back this year. Right now, Donald J. Trump is winning the country, as we've seen since the last time I was here. Donald J. Trump is winning the country right now on this idea that we need a disruptor in Washington, D.C. And what are they doing to Donald J. Trump right now? Right? They're trying to silence him. They are trying to silence Donald J. Trump because they fear him. They're afraid that if he gets empowered by the people of America, that the good times that they've been enjoying in Washington, D.C. for maybe 100 years is coming to an end. And for the same reason, we saw in this most recent, my final legislative session, a lot of the powers that be in Jefferson City, guess what? They wanted to silence me. In fact, when I was pushing initiative petition reform to protect our Constitution from the abortionists that want to enshrine the killing of unborn children into our founding document up to the moment of birth, when I was pushing so hard in the Missouri Senate to get that done. My leadership got so angry at me that they stripped me of my chairmanship of the Veterans Committee, and they took my parking space away.
It was far. I saw it.
I know. You saw it, right? We did a parking lot podcast. It was great. In fact, I called my wife and called her that they took my parking space. She said, you needed the steps anyway. Well, the bad news is, for them, that they can continue to do these things to silence the patriots that we do have in elected office down in Jefferson City. But the reality is, I don't care. I'm going to continue to take the bullets and slings and arrows that are going to come my way and have been coming my way for the past 8 years because I was willing to be the person I promised I would be in campaign season. And pretty soon we're going to do it on behalf of every one of the 6 million people that live in the state. But speaking of my now 8 years in Missouri, there are folks here in the crowd tonight that actually knew me the first time. I came forward in St. Charles and I said, I'm thinking about serving for office and I've got a real concern and hesitancy about government. Right, Annette, right? Remember, I didn't have any gray hair. I was more svelte back in those days, right? It's not kind being in politics. It's not kind. And we have more folks, since I've come into this conversation, we have more folks getting engaged in the political conversation right now than we've ever seen before. And most of them, pretty much all of them, are getting involved for the same reason, right? Maybe the many of the reasons that you've come here tonight to be a part of this conversation. That is, they see something wrong. They know instinctually there's something wrong in America. They know that there's something wrong in Missouri. They've seen the 2020 election. They've seen Obamacare in the 20-teens. They've seen the COVID crazy environment. They see Joe Biden opening up our border and letting an invasion of this country occur. And while we're losing hundreds of thousands of Americans around this country and in Missouri to the fentanyl crisis, he's sending our money and our soldiers over to Ukraine on the other side of the planet, allowing our weapons to be used inside of other countries. That sounds crazy, doesn't it? And so people instinctually know that something is wrong. And they want to take the country back. But you know the country I'm talking about, the one you grew up in. Where the rule of law meant something. Where you grew up believing that you were going to succeed beyond what your parents were accomplishing. And that your children would go further even than you had. Where is that American dream today? Right? Is it happening in Missouri? You know, when you turn on your TV in the morning and you hear about big red states that are doing big red things, are you hearing about Missouri?
No.
What states are you hearing about?
Texas.
There we go. It's the same one. Lori, how many of these events have you been? You hear the same states over and over, don't you?
Florida,
Texas, Tennessee. Why aren't we leading those states? Why aren't we leading these United States? When is Missouri's time going to be to cut the tax burden, to get our budget under control, to deport the illegals in this state? Why aren't Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott turning on their TV saying, man, I want to be more like the show me state? When is that time going to come? Because if it doesn't come soon, then the next generation of Missourians, which are going through our schools right now that are teaching them not reading, writing, and arithmetic, but CRT, DEI, and the idea that they can change the gender that God himself has ordained, and only a third of them know how to read at grade level, we're not going to have a good place for those children to grow up and take over for where we left off. And so people are angry about that. You're not alone. We're taking our state back, folks. Let's go Missouri. So what does this Missouri look like? Because this has always been a battle of ideas. On the first floor of the Capitol down in Jefferson City, one of my favorite sayings is inscribed on the front of the first floor archways of Jefferson City. And it says, ideas will rule the world. Ideas will rule the world. What is the Republican Party? Why are we having a primary to determine who our best representatives for our party at the state level should be? It's because we need to determine who's going to bring us together by advancing our principles. It's not just a label, right? Because a label without the ideals behind it, that leads you into this thing called rhinos, right? Our ideals being pushed by a strong, conservative, bold governor is what's going to make Missouri head and shoulders above the other states. What's going to make us a leader in these United States. And what are those ideas? Number one, and you heard me say this last time, folks, we are getting rid of personal property tax in the state of Missouri. You're going to own your cars from now on. There will be no more personal property tax under an Igel administration. How does that sound?
Number four.
What's that?
Why had it been done before?
Yeah. 29 other states have gotten rid of personal property tax. Missouri's going to be the 30th state. And I want you to remember, if you remember nothing else I say here tonight as you go home, remember that Missouri, none of the problems that we have in this state are a result of government not getting enough of your cash somewhere. The tax burden is twice as high in this state as it is in other of those big red states like Florida and Texas and Tennessee. Why haven't we had the Republicans and all these big super majorities cutting your tax burden and reducing the budget? Why hasn't that happened? Well, we have this problem with Republicans that don't like to do what they say in campaign season. So I'm talking about ideas. You know what else we're going to do? What about that invasion that's going on the southern border? It's estimated that Missouri has 70,000 illegal immigrants in the state of Missouri right now, costing the taxpayers billions of dollars, leading to criminal activity in our urban areas like St. Louis City and Kansas City. And then those criminal activities are using our highways as conduits of criminal activity, bringing in the fentanyl trade and the human trafficking trade, and it's devastating our urban cores and leaking out into our rural farming communities. Why haven't we done anything about illegal immigration in this state? Why don't we have a governor who does seem to be willing to send our national troops down to the border to help out the state of Texas, which is fantastic, and I'll continue to do it. But what are we going to do about the problems in this state? I want you to know that when I'm the governor of this state, one of the very first things I'm going to do is declare with this for what it is, an invasion under Article 4 of the Missouri Constitution, and we are going to detain and deport every illegal immigrant out of this state and back to the borders of this country. That's the Missouri that we're talking about. And I also want you to know, and I think I mentioned this last time, even though it was a year ago, we have so much money down in Jefferson City. If I have to buy a fleet of buses and drive the buses myself, we're going to make this happen. And we'll have a sign-up sheet in the back of the room tonight if you'd like to drive a bus as well. So please keep that in mind. I always think about that because one of the first times I ever said that in a public event, where I said, well, I'm going to get a fleet of buses and I'm going to drive them myself. Somebody came up to me afterwards and said, I want to drive a bus as well. Where's the sign-up sheet? So I'm going to have a sign-up sheet. If you're willing to drive a bus and take part, let's go Missouri. Well, what about our schools, right? How many of y'all pay property taxes? Right? You pay a record amount. Laura, you can raise your hand. I know you pay property tax. Come on now. You pay a record amount of property taxes right now. Right? Never paid more property taxes, but more money is going into our educational system than ever before. And yet, for all that sacrifice that you're making on behalf of our public schools, which most rational people want to support, how are the outcomes?
No.
Not so great. Because we're teaching our kids this transgender nonsense and this DEI stuff that teaches them to treat one another differently based on the color of their skin. And where does that come from? It comes from the Federal Department of Education. Because we take money from the feds that comes down to Jefferson City and then goes out to the public school districts with money and mandates, forcing them to teach our kids this junk at pain of losing the money and pulling their accreditation. So when I'm the governor of the state, we're going to break this cycle of failure. I'm going to stop taking all that federal money from the Federal Department of Education. We're going to cut off all the mandates and money that's going through the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education in Jefferson City, and we're going to get all of this DEI, CRT, transgender nonsense out of every public school in this state, and we're going to teach kids to read, write, and do math in this state from now on. I feel like I could talk about these ideas for a long, long time. 41 hours? Is that what I heard? 41 hours? Well, I want to spend most of the time answering your questions. So I'll talk a little bit about how the campaign looks, because I could not do this without, we have had on my website, if you go to BillEigel.com, BillEigel.com, what was that website?
BillEigel.com.
We've had almost 40,000 Missouri residents sign up to volunteer for the campaign, doing everything from as simple as putting a sign in their yard or knocking doors for us or holding an event like this. 40,000 individuals. 1,500 individuals who have said they'd like to knock doors and help me get my message out. Because we know our message is going to win. In fact, when I started this process 2 years ago, we took polling, right? And don't get me wrong, I've heard everything that the swamp has said. They said, oh my gosh, Bill Eichel can't win this race. He doesn't have enough special interest lobbyist money. He doesn't have enough name ID. He can't win this race. And so we took polling. And the polling said 2 years ago that I was losing by over 40 points. Imagine me talking to my wife after that polling and saying I was going to do it anyway because I believed in Missouri that much. And then I was saying, I'm going to spend the next 2 years doing this because I believe in this so much. And I'm going to put 70,000 miles on the truck I just bought because I believe in this so much. Because I knew 2 years ago that today, as I got here and stood before you today for this meet and greet right here, that I would be able to tell you that a week and a half ago, my daughter just graduated high school. Lisa's my only daughter. I have a son as well. But Lisa's my only daughter. She just graduated high school. She's got a 4.0 GPA, and she's beautiful. She got both of those things from my wife. All right, none of them came from me. So I know that she's going to be successful wherever she goes. But I want her to be successful here. I mean, I'm thinking that if there may be part of God's plan, that I'll get some grandchildren one day. And I don't want them in Florida or Texas or Tennessee. I want them here. I want them in Owensville. I want them in St. Charles. I want them here. I know she's going to be successful. I just want to grow a family and own a business in Missouri, in the Show Me State, because we have an opportunity to be leaders. And so I did this for 2 years. I went all over the state. I met tens of thousands of Republicans talking about and calling them to consider supporting me on behalf of not of just the fact that I'm a candidate, but this Missouri that I'm talking about that I believe in, and I know that you believe in as well. And as a result, after 2 years of effort, we just got another poll today. We're within 6 points of the lead. 6 points. We're excited. And there's a lot of energy. Like I said, this is my eighth event in a day and a half. I'm pretty excited. So I'm asking you, my ask of you tonight, is I already know that the Missouri I'm talking about is the Missouri that you're looking for. Not because I've gotten so tremendous positive feedback from all the events that I've held about when I throw out that I'm going to get rid of personal property tax. I know that this is the Missouri you want because every 2 years, the first Tuesday in November, you show up and ask for it. That's what you're doing when you elect all those big supermajorities of Republicans and all these statewide leaders that are going to lead Missouri to the top of these United States. And you've been demanding it for so long that you're angry that it's taking so long for these politicians to respond and actually be who they promised they would be. Well, I'm telling you right now, this is the moment where we're going to make all of those dreams a reality. This is the moment where we're going to take the lead in these United States and do all those things that the swamp and the status quo down in Jefferson City is busy telling us that we can't have or we can't get to because their imagination doesn't include a Missouri that's that strong and that prosperous. And that attractive for growth in families in the American way, right here in the Show Me State. And even though they can't imagine it, it's as real and it is worth fighting for as anything that you or I could describe to anybody else in Missouri. Let's go find that Missouri. And don't believe the status quo in the swamp when they say that we can't get to that Missouri. And they'll tell you, you can't get rid of personal property tax because government. They'll say that we can't get rid of the legals because government. And they'll say we can't get rid of the CRT and DEI in the schools because I don't know what reason they'll come up with, but they'll think of something. And they'll say they'll be down around the next time the next COVID environment comes along and they fail to respond to it. They'll give you all the reasons in the world why we can't get to this Missouri, why that Missouri maybe isn't even worth fighting for because aren't things going great? Don't be afraid of that. Don't buy into that. One of my favorite quotes in the Bible, I use this and I say this in almost every speech that I give. Joshua chapter 1, verse 9. Have I not commanded thee? Be bold and courageous. Do not be dismayed. Do not be afraid, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you shall go. Let's go, Missouri. This is a Missouri we're going to find together. Come with me. Let's go, Missouri. Thank you, everybody. So, Brandon, we're doing question and answers?
Yep.
All right, so we're going to do some question and answers, and then we're going to have some mingle time. So you're going to get to talk to me individually. You can talk to Lori, who's here, and some of the other candidates that are here. Nothing's off limits. I've already been answering questions today. I used to be the guy going to events, asking all the questions. You know how there's always one in the back of the room asking questions. That was me. But now I'm answering questions. So nothing's off limits. What's on your mind? Yes, sir.
You've identified a big problem in the state of Missouri with the rhinos.
Just one? Oh.
Plural.
Okay.
Plural. Are you quite prepared to speak out loudly and boldly against the rhinos that have done everything within their power to stifle the grassroots element.
Yeah.
Because they need to be identified.
Yes. In fact, I would argue, not only am I ready to call the rhinos out, that's what I've been doing for the past 8 years. In fact, I've done it so much, naming the names, right, that they hate me down in Jefferson City.
Well, anytime you lose a parking spot, that's true. However, the big money is supporting the rhinos that are playing the game.
You betcha.
What is your quest? How do you go about exposing the roots of their falseness so that people not only here in Owensville, but throughout the state can say, I recognize that.
Yes. So we've been doing that for the past 8 years. I've been doing that in the Senate by putting them on votes that would reveal their true colors, and then using digital or earned media to tell everybody who was voting the wrong way on these things. And we've made a lot of progress. In fact, a lot of the folks have gotten into office, both in the state Senate and the state House, by seeing the voting records, which continue to deteriorate down in Jefferson City. The bigger question is, why has that Republican rhino establishment status quo been allowed to persist in Jefferson City? My answer to that question is because we've had the wrong person at the top who wasn't leading this state. In fact, think about Tennessee, Texas, Florida, right? We all recognize those states are doing pretty well. They got these. You know, it's not that those states don't have rhinos in their legislature. It's not that those states that don't have moderate Republicans that, if given half the chance, will betray the GOP brand and compromise with the Democrats, right? It's not that they don't have those moderates. They're moderates in every state. But what they do have in those states is a governor that does the one thing that our governor doesn't do, and that is call on Republicans to do Republican things. We're going to be so busy racking up big red Republican victories that if there are any rhinos left that aren't willing to be caught up in that, you bet I'm going to identify who they are. We're going to vote them out of office. That's what we do. Kim Reynolds did that up in Iowa. We have bold governors not just leading on policy, but being willing to call out and work against those that are betraying you by lying about their principles in campaign season. So yes, but more than that, I'm going to call on these Republicans. People always say, Bill, you're kind of an abrasive guy, right? I am. You're kind of a bold, aggressive guy. How's an abrasive guy like myself going to lead and bring the party back together? How many of you believe the Republican Party is fractured? Right? Don't you want to know how an aggressive guy like me is going to bring us all back together? Do I seem like a nice guy diplomat? It's not about diplomacy. It's not about being a good cop. For me, it's about calling on Republicans and expecting them to do Republican things. We're fractured right now as a party, not because we've got a bunch of grassroots that don't know how to behave. We're fractured not because there's a couple senators like Bill Ligel in Jefferson City that don't get along with the other senators. We're fractured because senior Republican leadership in this state all too often calls on Republicans to do non-Republican things. When the governor of this state calls on Republicans to pass the largest tax increase in state history on our gas tax, that's not a Republican thing, folks, and it fractures the party because there's guys like me and folks like you that didn't sign up for that. When the governor of this state allows Medicaid expansion to happen, allows the initiative petition reform bill to die on the Senate floor without saying a word, those aren't Republican standards. And he fractures the party because folks are looking for leadership, and when he doesn't deliver that, it fractures the party. When the minimum wage goes up, when other things on the liberal Democrat agenda get done in this state and our budget doubles in the span of 5 years, that's not a Republican thing, and it fractures the party because that's not what we signed up for. I am going to bring this party together by doing exactly what those other bold conservative governors have done. I'm going to call on them to pass initiative petition reform, to eliminate your personal property tax, deport the illegal immigrants in this state, to get rid of this junk, this nonsense that's going on in our schools. And together, and if there are some Republicans that don't want to go along with that down in Jefferson City, that's okay, because I've got the goodwill of more than 3 million Missouri Republicans that are going to help me put a whole bunch of pressure on those few rhinos that are left and don't want to work and be who they said they were going to be. Let's get started. Yes, sir. Yep.
Yeah, I was going to mention that one of the things that's got to happen is vetting people that come into the party. What's the point of having all these parties And I know there's been some counties here that have attempted to do it, but then have gotten the threat of lawsuits after they've done it.
Yeah.
And I'm saying it's high time to tell these people that are threatening the lawsuits, go pound sand, because what's the point of even having a party if you're not going to vet the people that are coming in to make sure? That's part of the problem we got now. I mean, look at the fight you've had trying to get gold and silver through. Louisiana now has passed their sixth gold and silver bill, I was seeing in a news article this week, and Missouri hasn't even gotten its first one through.
Yep. Well, it's a great question. So the vetting process, by the way, this is a natural conversation for a party that's been in power in the state of Missouri for more than 20 years. There's an old saying in politics, though the party out of power wants power, the party in power wants purity. Well, we've been in power for more than two decades, so Republican voters are wanting to know, where are we going to find not more Republicans, but the right Republicans, right? And so the natural result of that is when people are starting to look at different ways to vet these candidates. In the legislature, it's actually pretty easy. You look at how they vote. And there have been, Vernon County, I know, has a vetting process. I actually went through the vetting process. I remember when I went through the vetting process, you have to take a multiple choice test, which is the first multiple choice test I've taken since my college days, more than 25 years ago. And I was a little nervous, right? Because I told my wife that I was going to take this test, and Amanda looks at me and says, "You better pass." And I go down, I took the test. As it turns out, I'm a Republican. Because they also were looking at my voting record in the Senate. So I think that's a natural part. I think that this is going to continue to be a big part of the Republican process, the primary process in future election years. And we are seeing more people engage in wanting to know who these elected officials are and running for office themselves than we've ever seen before. So I think it's a very good thing. I think you're going to see more of it. And after I'm in there, when I'm the governor of this state, we're going to have a state party chairman that's going to start implementing some of these vetting procedures statewide so we don't get any more of those rhinos into office. So, yes, sir. Don't worry. We got time for everybody. Yes, sir.
I apologize for my ignorance, but what powers as governor do you have executively to institute should legislature fail on the things that you propose?
Yeah, great question. I love questions. All right. So, great question. So the question is, how with executive power as outlined under the Constitution, what can I do on my own, and what can I do that I'll need legislative cooperation, where if I don't get that legislative cooperation, what am I going to do in that case? All right. So the first thing is, what can I do on my own? Here's what I can do on my own. I'll do this on the first day. I can declare under Article 4 of our Constitution an invasion of the state of Missouri from illegal immigration. That will empower me to use the highway patrol, every sheriff in the state, and the National Guard as necessary to detain and deport every single one of them and get them out of the state. I'm willing to use some of the additional resources that's under the surpluses of the state's budget to make sure that we have the resources to either buy a fleet of buses or to make sure we're paying enough officers to make that happen. So I can actually take care of that on my own. I don't need legislative action. I will say that I filed legislation this year making it a state-level crime to be in the state illegally. Not just a federal crime, but a state-level crime. And I would continue, obviously, certainly I would continue to support that and push that through the legislature, but that's something under the executive powers that I can do myself. Second thing, I'm talking about education, right? How am I going to stop these mandates getting in from our schools? Well, the one person in this state that's empowered under our Constitution as it relates to the state budget and controlling that state budget is the governor. The governor recommends the budget, the governor has line item veto authority over the budget, and the governor has withhold authority over the budget. And if that's not enough, the governor can just decide not to spend the money because he's in charge of the executive branch. So I'm going to submit a budget in my very first year that eliminates every single dollar from the Federal Department of Education. And we're going to start breaking up the bureau, one of Jefferson City's worst bureaucracies, that's the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. And I'm going to be able to do that with my veto pen, and I'm going to be able to do that with my executive authority. The legislature can give me all the appropriations authority that they wish to spend on the bureaucracy, but I don't have to take it. Okay?
Can you give the details on DESE?
Sure.
From where it started in 1970 and where it is now?
Yes.
Just for people that don't know. Let's do a timeout on this.
Yes. Okay, so DESE used to be an office of about a half a dozen people. Back when it was started, when was it? What year was that?
1976 or 78,
okay.
Something like that.
It was about a half a dozen people. Their only job was to send checks to the local public schools. That's it. That's all they had to do. Today, there are more than 1,800 employees in the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Does anybody know what they're doing?
Wreaking havoc.
They're serving as the clearinghouse for federal mandates coming from D.C. And here's the real dirty secret in Jefferson City. All of those senators voting for those appropriations bills, they don't know what all those positions are doing either. That's what really aggravates me. In fact, when you hear Lori Rook talk, she's talking about actually finding out how and where all this money is getting spent. You're not going to be popular in Jefferson City, Lori. I'm so sorry about this, but that's not going to make you any friends down there.
You don't really care, don't you?
So I can have a huge impact on that as well. Now, here's something I'm going to need a little cooperation from the legislature, and that's getting rid of personal property tax. There's ways to do it legislatively. You could reduce the assessment rate on personal property, which is currently 33.1%, down to zero. But you need a law. You need a law passed to do that. So, because I've seen the hesitation from legislators on doing this, and maybe even a new governor is going to struggle to get them in line to get rid of personal property tax, I'm going to do what Greg Abbott just did a few months ago down in Texas. Now, Texas doesn't have personal property tax, but they do have pretty high regular property tax. They actually have higher regular property taxes than Missouri does. And Greg Abbott called, he told, going into their legislative regular session this year, Greg Abbott told the Texas legislature, we're going to do a regular property tax cut here in this state, right? Just like I'm saying, we want to do a personal property tax cut. And he said, if you don't do it, we're going to be back in a special session. Well, what do you know? The Texas legislature, which has its own rhino problems from time to time, don't know if you've heard, didn't want to get on board. They wasted their entire legislative session and didn't get anything done on regular property taxes. True to his word, Greg Abbott called back in a special session, and for 60 days, the Texas legislature sat in Austin, still not doing anything on regular property taxes. Greg Abbott said, oh, come on back. We're going to do another special session. The second special session down in Austin. This time, at this point, everyone in Texas is watching, right? Imagine the stories that would be written in Missouri if I called the legislature, get rid of your personal property tax, two sessions in a row, and they just refused to do it. You'd have every single person that has paid $500 for a 10-year-old vehicle for way too long calling their state senator or their representative saying, you better get on board with Governor Hyde. And that's what happened in Texas. And in the middle of that second special session, Texas not only passed the largest property tax cut in Texas history, they passed the largest property tax cut in American history, all because the governor had the willpower to use an issue that he knew the people agreed with him on. And if I polled every Missouri citizen on personal property tax, I'm willing to bet 85% of the people agree with it. Because personal property tax is not a conversation about whether or not we can and should continue to fund local services that every rational person believes we ought to have. It is a conversation about whether or not charging you rent on December 1st for the crime of owning a car, that you need to get to work, that you need to get to each other, that you need to get to church, is the right way to do it. 29 other states have figured it out, and when I'm governor, the 30th state's going to figure it out.
Okay, so I'm going to throw this to Jerry if you want to chime in. But I know one of the feedbacks that we've heard in meetings, and I think you were at the last one.
I'm going to have a Bill Eigel sugar cookie because this is your third question. I get a partial Bill Eigel sugar cookie.
There we go.
All right.
So I know our collector, she's worried about how she's going to get her money coming in to pay for things in Yasmin County. It's going to be secured if we get rid of personal property tax, because Yasmin County, I mean, to be honest, relative to St. Louis or Jackson or Greene, we're nothing. So what in your
I don't think
proposal,
I would put it that way.
Well, but that's honest. I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, you look at the number of representatives and how it's all, you know, we've got one and they've got 20. So anyway, how can she be guaranteed that in that model, as a county, to pay for the services that this county needs to provide its citizens,
great,
that she will still have that money coming in, even though her current revenue is based upon property tax revenue, it's no longer, how would you do that?
Yeah, so 70,000 miles I've traveled around the state, this is the most common question I get at almost every place I go, because everybody's like, yes, we got to get rid of personal property tax, and they're like, but how will you replace it? Right? How would you replace
it? Tax is going to do it, but
all right. I'm not. Now, bear with me for a second. I'm not just going to replace it with another new tax that I'm going to stab you in the back somewhere else with. My intention by getting rid of personal property tax is to lower the tax burden. Now, that being said, state spending in Jefferson City over the past 6 years has increased $25 billion. $25 billion we've increased state spending in the past 5 years. The value of every personal property tax bill in every county, St. Louis, Gascanator, every county, Osage, you name it, every county, collectively, is only about $1.7 billion. What I will do is I'm going to cut the government in Jefferson City, and I'm going to use the surpluses gained as a result of getting rid of all the wasteful things that we're wasting your money on to reimburse the area, the local areas, for the dollars that they lose. And we have so much waste in Jefferson City that we're going to be able to not only get rid of personal property tax comfortably, we're going to be able to go after state income tax as well. And actually, that's why we need more folks looking through the books to find out where all this money is going. Not even I know where a lot of the bodies are hidden in that budget, but I don't even know where all of them are hidden. We're going to have a team of folks going through that budget and undoing the waste that has been building up for actually longer than Republicans have been in charge, going back to the Democratic regimes of the 80s and 90s. We've got to do that. I'll give you a couple examples where some of the waste is. You know, we had a third-party audit of our Medicaid program back in 2017 that found that we waste more than $1 billion every single year just on our Medicaid program. We have a state workforce that's twice as big as other states our size. We have a 55,000 person workforce where 5,000 to 7,000 of those positions are empty every year. And yet we send the money to departments anyway. What happens to the money? Lori worked for Treasury, right? This is what she talks about. She went at length at the last event that we were at. But this is what we're talking about. If we get rid of all that waste that senators and representatives are voting on these budget bills, they have no idea where the waste is. I'm going to find the waste, and I'm going to get rid of your personal property tax. Yeah.
But is there going to be some baseline state funding that will appease the collectors who are saying, okay, where am I getting the money that I have to pay these people for? That's what you're
yes.
getting feedback from.
Yes.
You've got to have some baseline that you're going to give each of these.
So the baseline will be what they're getting, whatever Gasconade, as an example, is collecting in personal property tax right now. We're going to reimburse them at that moment in time, for that moment when we get rid of it, we're going to reimburse that amount to the local areas with state-level funds. That's what we're going to do.
Some cost of living adjustments going forward as they speak. Because
we'll see. You're getting into a lot of details here. And by the way, keep in mind that of all the problems we have in the state, none of them have to do with not enough of your cash going to government somewhere. So listen, when I started talking about getting rid of personal property tax, I can make the case as a pure conservative that maybe we should just cut the budget and not talk about any reimbursements to the local areas. I'm just being candid with you. So I've kind of come to this place where I think that I can make so many cuts to the state budget that we can reimburse the counties for where they're at. And if the counties need more money than that, then they can go back to their voters and ask for it. If they need additional adjustments upwards, they can ask for it.
I just don't want you to have negative feedback.
No, not at all. Not at all. This is the most common question we get. We got plenty of money. Yeah.
Over here.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Oh, yes, I wondered, what about 727?
Senate Bill 727?
Yes, did you vote for that?
I did. So
you seem real happy about it. Why did you vote for it?
So 727 was the election, the school choice bill. It's pretty controversial, actually. 727 had some good parts and it had some bad parts. The good parts of the bill, it was an expansion of school choice. For educational savings accounts statewide. I've always been a proponent of some school choice to empower parents. That was a good part of it. The bad part of it is it did have provisions in there in order to get it through the Senate chamber that actually expanded some of the authority of DESE, which I think was
a
bad part. And that was the bad part. One of the things that I was watching very closely on 727 was whether or not it was going to open the door for our government to get into our homeschools. Because that was a big issue, we wanted to make sure that anything that we were doing wasn't going to bring government into our homeschools. In fact, Sherry knows late at night when that bill came to the floor, we were in contact with several statewide homeschool organizations that had to give us the green light before even I would let it come to a final vote. We finally ultimately felt comfortable with where that bill was, and we made a decision, I made a decision to go ahead and support it. Now, that being said, I'm always going to continue to be supportive of school choice measures. I'm a supporter of charter schools, I'm a supporter of educational savings account or voucher programs, but all of those things collectively are not going to fix on their own the education system in Missouri. You have to have a reform and a dismantlement of Missouri's biggest bureaucracy, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, because though that organization is suffocating and allowing the mandates to come through from D.C., that's where all this junk in our schools is coming from. So it has to be both sides of the same coin. And yes, 727 was far from a perfect bill. I concur with that completely. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how do we, in the process of dealing with school choice, like in the situation with vouchers, the biggest fear I have out of all this is that the federal government getting involved and the things that people are going to have to, homeschoolers and various other school private schools are going to have to give up in order to receive this. You know,
yeah.
You don't. There's never something for nothing. You know.
Yes. Yes. And when it comes to federal government, the federal money, I'm going to stop taking federal money. And actually, if we're being candid, we're not just going to stop taking the federal money for the Department of Education. We're going to stop taking a lot of the federal money that's in our state budget right now. Half of our budget is coming from the federal government right now. Does anybody know how many states have more of their budget as a percentage coming from the federal government than Missouri? Zero. We are the highest. Annette's heard me give this talk a couple times. We are the highest one. We are the highest one. Think about that. We are more dependent. Missouri is more dependent on the federal government getting half of our cash from the federal government than any other state in the union. We're more dependent than Illinois. We're more dependent than California. We're more dependent than New York. Does this sound like what you were promised as a Missouri in campaign season?
No.
Of course not. Where is the money going?
We're about to find out.
We're going to find out. I already know where a lot of it's going that needs to be cut, but we're going to go through every single line item, and when we get the budget right side, when we get the state workforce right side, instead of spending $30 million on a synthetic meat laboratory that produces fake meat to compete with our ranchers, instead of spending $50 million on sports stadium upgrades for the World Cup in Kansas City, we're going to be cutting your tax burden. We're going to be getting rid of personal property tax. I mean, think about, consider this. Last year alone, in last year's fiscal year, we had growth in state revenues, not even federal revenues, growth in state revenues of more than $2 billion. Just the growth was more than $2 billion. That's more than every personal property tax bill combined. We could have gotten rid of every personal property tax bill on every citizen and every business in the state and still had $300 million left over. But we didn't do that. Instead, we wasted your money. And when I say we, I add me to that because I was voting against those budget bills. So the Missouri I'm talking about, we're going to get away. We're going to restore fiscal sanity to Jefferson City. And you know what? It's not going to make me any more popular down there. That's okay. I'm going to get up early to kick over all their apple cart. Let's get started. Let's go, Missouri. Yes, sir.
Okay. On the initiative petition reform,
yeah.
You know, you had so many struggle, and they just kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off.
Yep.
Anything good, they seem to do that. Is there some way that you can put a clamp on that?
As governor?
Yes.
Yes, they're good. So the initiative petition reform fight, is everybody familiar with that story? This is the, we wanted to make it more difficult. I want to see it more difficult to change the Constitution in the state of Missouri. Right now we have a very low standard to change the Constitution, and liberal supermajorities in St. Louis City and Kansas City are voting to put things like abortion, Medicaid expansion, higher minimum wage into our Constitution that's out of step with what I believe the people of the state want. So I want to follow more the model of our federal Constitution, which is very hard to change, not just based on a simple majority. And we were trying to pass a bill that was going to require 5 of the 8 congressional districts to approve any ballot question, not just a simple majority. And the reason we wanted to do that is so that you couldn't just run up numbers in St. Louis and Kansas City to get a liberal Democrat policy enshrined in our Constitution, like abortion up until birth. And we had a lot of problems because the rhinos in the Missouri Senate and the Missouri House, our leadership, couldn't get these things over the finish line. They kept stalling and waiting to the very end. And while this was going on, what did you hear from our governor?
Crickets.
What did you hear from our lieutenant governor that wants to be your next governor?
Crickets.
What's required for evil to triumph? Good men to do nothing. The absence of that leadership crushed the IP reform. I mean, yes, I was out there filibustering, leveraging the Senate. We had the Freedom Caucus out there pushing. We had other senators, your senator, Ben Brown, he's not a member of the Freedom Caucus, but he was out there pushing and fighting. But we couldn't get it over the finish line, and while we were bleeding out in the Senate, our leadership was doing nothing. So what would I do? Well, I actually called on Governor Parson to call a special session to do this a year ago. If I were the governor of the state, we would have accomplished IP reform 12 months ago. It had already been in front of the people, and it probably already would have been in our Constitution. In failing that, having a governor willing to engage with the people, with the senators, go into those senators' office, and if a few arms need twisting, fantastic. I'm going to be that person. I'm here to pass big red Republican ideas, and if there are Republicans that don't want to get on board, we are going to hold them accountable. So that absence of leadership and unwillingness of Parson to engage really hurt the cause. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about an idea of trying to get a farm freedom bill passed here in the state of Missouri, because as you know right now, they're trying to, as an example of something that needs to be nipped in the bud, is they're trying to raise all kinds of fear and go after people and do these phony tests on cows and chickens and everything else for bird flu. And in the end, all it's doing is we're winding up losing more and more of our meat supply as the FDA is coming in and forcing farmers to kill their chickens or whatever, even if they find
down.
A spore of bird flu, which is nuts, because we've never done this before. I mean, we're doing all kinds of, the federal government's doing all kinds of stupid stuff, which is going to wind up ruining our food supply. And I wanted to ask you if there's what we could do here in the state of Missouri to get some sort of a farm freedom bill passed so that we can kind of nullify some of this stuff and get rid of the harassment of farmers over all this stuff.
100%. The phrase of the night so far, the federal government is doing all sorts of stupid stuff. I mean, how often could we have said that?
And some of the things that you touch turns to crap.
Yeah, everything they touch turns to crap. Yeah, that this is pretty much true. And actually, look at some of the things that you just heard. You know, killing chickens because of their regulations, forcing farmers to destroy their own livestock and their own property.
Yeah.
Man, you know, it sounds crazy. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the COVID environment. Look at all the stupid things we did in the COVID environment. Remember we had Sam Page up in St. Louis County, and he's like, I'm going to tell you how many people you're allowed to have over for Thanksgiving dinner.
The doctor.
We had Tashara Jones down in the city telling people they had to actually turn over their HIPAA health records to ensure that they had gotten the jab. I mean, we see all this kind of craziness coming from Washington, D.C. What is the best way, the heart of the question is, what's the best way to resist the federal government? Well, to protect the Second Amendment rights, we passed something called the Second Amendment Preservation Act that basically said that no authority in the state of Missouri is going to cooperate with federal authorities when they come into our state and try to take our guns. I think that's a great example of the kind of bill that we could be passing to protect us from the FDA and all these other three-letter federal entities, whether it's the IRS or the EPA. But what's inherently at the base of it, what is the best way to separate ourselves from the over-tyranny of the federal government? Stop taking all that money.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Stop taking all that money. Everything comes back to everything that we're beholden on these federal mandates, 99% of them come because we've taken so much federal money, we're not in a position as a state to resist. They already own us because they'll tell our legislators or our governor, if you don't do that, we're going to withhold the money. I can't wait for them to tell me that they're going to take the money. Don't threaten me with a good time. I remember a conversation. You don't have emissions checks on your vehicles out here in this area, but we have them in St. Louis County. You actually have to take your car over and get an emissions check. It's terrible. It takes hours to get scheduled for this. They plug a vacuum cleaner into the tailpipe of your car, and if two red dots come up on the screen, you fail, and you got to buy a new catalytic converter, and that is crazy. But if you know what, if we don't do these emissions checks, which are held over your head and you can't register a car unless you do them, the federal government might take $20 or $30 million of transportation money. Okay. I actually got a bill passed to free the entire St. Louis area from these silly emissions checks, but Parson vetoed it because he was terrified of losing the money. None of the problems we have result from not enough of your cash going to government somewhere, folks. We're going to do a lot better. Yes, sir.
What is your stance on synthetic fuels that are stealing our cropland?
Cropland. You got a little excited
make,
there.
To make fuel to promote the EV governmental diktats. So
I'm opposed.
So on all of that, correct?
Yes. So this climate change nonsense has been making its way into Missouri. And what's the purpose of what's the end goal? And you referred to several of the climate change symptoms right there, right?
The end goal
what's the end
communism.
Game of climate change?
Socialism.
Communism.
Oh. Communism.
Oh, communism.
And control.
You know what? God bless Missouri. Look at you guys go. I mean, that woke you up. I think I heard like 2 dozen answers. Okay. What's the end goal of climate change?
Communism. Control.
Communism?
Yep.
Money. Control.
Yep.
Control. Right?
Well, that's part of communism, isn't it?
Same thing. Communism. Control, right?
Yes.
The names of different forms. Government is government. Control. Climate change policies like this were used over in the Netherlands, over on the other side of the planet, to drive the farmers off their land and reduce the tillable ground in the Netherlands, which used to be Europe's number one crop producer, food-producing nation, to eliminate 50% of the crops that are produced in the Netherlands. Climate change policies. Silliness like this. It was driven by the World Economic Forum, and it actually caused,
well,
you probably
communists.
Saw on the news, all the farmers that are rioting over in the Netherlands right now is because they've literally been driven off their land by these climate change policies. So that's the goal. Now it's made its way to Canada, and they're working very hard with Justin Trudeau up in Canada to destroy the farmland up in Canada. And guess who's after that? And they're coming down into these United States, and they've already started, the WEF has already started a chapter down in Cape Girardeau, right here in Missouri.
I know.
So they've got Missouri in the crosshairs, and we've got foreign entities buying up our land, and China bought 50,000 acres thanks to a bad vote from legislators back in 2013, but you know who the number one foreign owner of Missouri land is?
China.
Not China.
Netherlands.
Not Netherlands.
Canada.
Who said Canada? Who did that? There you go. Canada, number one foreign owner of Missouri land. I had no idea. See how the process is continuing to move on? And they're coming in. That's why I'm saying that, yes, when we talk about preventing China from buying our land, which you're now going to hear from both of my opponents, of course we should prevent China from buying our land. But we should restrict all foreign countries from buying our land. All of them. Because it's our food supply. And if they get control of our food supply, they will control us. And they know it. So I'm going to resist all of this climate change nonsense to the nth degree. And if we start seeing these mandates, which we already are seeing them from the federal government, I'm going to get up early in the morning to tell the federal government that. I can't wait.
Well, currently something come across my web that suggested that Southwest Missouri has a growing issue with meat sludge, the processing offal from slaughtering chickens, cattle, and pigs. And they're just putting it out in these big lagoons. And then they process it into fertilizer, and they're trying to give it to farmers. Now, the DNR is against it, but we, as a state, have supported the research into it and said it was okay because we licensed it as a state. The mix of the problem is part of our state is saying, here's some money to go invest in some idea, and the other part of the state waits while they invest all this money, then turn around and say you can't do that because it's against our conservation aspect, the cleanliness of the air. I don't understand the mismatch of state government promoting something, and on the other hand, the next entity says you can't do that.
Yeah, the reality of government seemingly telling you incompatible message is an unfortunate outcome of having so much government in the first place now, which we've never had. Yes, Brandon.
I just got a question. You know, I mean, there's a difference between a hand up and a hand out. It seems like the government wants to just give more handouts and set a hand up. I've heard many employers telling me that they've got to cut back their hours to get help for one or two children, or they lose it. Lose, like, for babysitting and stuff like that. So, I mean, the people that want to work, isn't it better to help them?
You know, on that note, on our Medicaid program, I want to ask you guys a very simple question. Medicaid is our biggest welfare program in our state. It helps some of our most vulnerable citizens that we have in this state. But it also is a benefit for many very able-bodied individuals that have no restriction, physical or mental restriction, on their ability to work. Let me ask you a very simple question. Do you believe that if they are able-bodied, and if they want to continue to get that welfare benefit, that they ought to have a work requirement of some sort?
And they should be drug tested.
I got drug tested when I worked for the company I worked for. I got drug tested 9 times. I was told when they walked in the door that it was my turn. And I kept saying, pick me because you know I'm safe.
So
welfare people do not have to be drug tested.
So the federal government has said that we can implement these type of work requirements or drug requirements. And we've had to come up multiple times during my 8 years in the Senate, but could never get past a Democratic filibuster. Not that we don't have enough Republicans to implement such a policy that would probably bring a tremendous amount of efficiency to one of our biggest government programs. But we didn't have enough spine-driven Republicans willing to tell the Democrats to sit down. And that's the problem. That's fundamentally the problem. Brandon, you really make a great point. This is something we could absolutely get better outcomes in our biggest government programs, but we're just giving a hand out. In fact, remember in the COVID environment and we were so we as a federal government and people were so excited that we were going to get all this money from the feds, right? During the COVID environment, billions and billions of dollars from the feds. One of the requirements, if you accepted the federal money, which we did, one of the requirements was that for our Medicaid program, even if an individual no longer qualified for Medicaid, we were prohibited as a state from removing them from Medicaid. People would leave the state. We couldn't take them off our program. It was incredibly ridiculous. And that's exactly the kind of restriction that we're operating under when we take all this federal money. So fixing the work requirements is something I would absolutely support. We can make it better, and we can actually do that, even under the current program. So it's something that we've really got to address. Yes, sir.
So I was just wondering, so I know you're last legislative session, you had the bill to legalize sports gambling in the state.
I did not have that bill. Oh, you mean the Senate had the bill?
Yeah. And then the bill failed, right? And then now it's up on IP. I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on that?
On expanding gambling?
Yeah.
So I will tell you that the GOP platform, our party platform, states very clearly that we don't support an expansion of gambling.
Right.
So I've typically not been supportive of expansion of gambling. Now,
right.
There are a lot of folks there's some folks that are interested in expanding that. I would tell you that if I had to list top 100 issues and concerns that I have about the state of Missouri and things that I would like to see passed to make the state stronger, I don't know that this issue is in the top 100.
Okay.
No.
I was also going to say, it's just super easy to gamble from St. Louis, too.
Yeah, I understand. I'm with you. So you can go to, casinos. And the people of Missouri have spoken that we have 13 gambling licenses owned by the casinos.
Right.
I'm pretty... this is not one of my passionate issues.
I just saw it was up on IP Reform.
Yeah, it is up on IP Reform. I've actually seen the polling on that.
Yeah.
Right now it's about 35 to 60 against expanding gambling in the state of Missouri. So I'd be surprised if it passed. I think the sports teams who are really the ones that are going to benefit from this, they're going
to
make millions.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
I went to all the St. Louis area sports, and I'm like, why?
Yeah. Yeah, so they're going to really benefit from. I think they're going to try to spend a lot of money to get over the finish line. I don't know if they'll be successful.
Which is why I think IP reform is important.
Yes, 100%. Yes, I'm gonna just try to get to other folks. I'm gonna come back to you. Don't worry. But for other folks, yes, ma'am.
What was your rank when you left the Air Force?
Captain. I was a captain in the Air Force.
Okay. I was asked that question by someone whose door I knocked on just yesterday. People are interested in things that you never thought to tell us.
Yeah. Yeah. No. No. I was so both Amanda and I were captains in the Air Force. Here's another fun fact about my military service. I'm actually third generation. So I have a lot of military service in my family. I'm actually a third generation veteran. My grandfather was a cook for the U.S. Army in World War II. My father was a pilot for the United States Air Force and flew at the Vietnam War. I was an aircraft maintenance officer where I served in Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom in 2003 into 2005. And actually a fourth generation of my family. My only son, Kevin, actually just graduated from U.S. Navy basic training just a couple weeks ago. So I have four generations of the Eagle family now. And, you know, Christmas, he got me a Navy dad t-shirt. I mean, I don't know how to feel about that as an RS Air Force veteran, but I tell you what, I put that, it's like my guilty pleasure. I put that Navy dad t-shirt because I'm so proud of him, and I just put that on there even though I'm an Air Force guy. So if there are Air Force guys in here, it's okay.
But
it
says dad.
It says dad.
It's not misrepresentation.
I know. That's why I'm so proud.
Something else that I would ask is, does your business take government contracts? I didn't know the answer to that. So that just
my Skylight business?
Yeah.
Well, I actually sold that business. So I don't have that business.
Well, that gentleman actually did whatever he needed to do to find out and then called me back and told me, he does not, you've got my book.
Okay.
you've got his book.
All right.
May I say something to the group about door knocking?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
Everybody just dreads it. You think it's god awful. And surprisingly, it's not. Because I almost didn't do it, but I kind of let Zeke make me believe he had done. Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. But anyway, they give you this neat little app, and it tells you who lives at this address. And they're handpicked to be conservative, although you could wrong one too.
Yes, occasionally you get a wrong one.
Yeah.
It's okay. What's that?
Numenor or?
This is Walkbook, our I-360. Yeah. Okay, but anyway, when you knock on that door, for the most part, it's wrong sometimes, but for the most part, you know who lives there, you know how old they are, you know who your target voter is. They're all conservatives, supposedly, but you know who the target is, which may be all of them, maybe just one of them, but there's at least one target in there. And all you have to do is take what they already believe in, which is conservative, and get them to translate that into, okay, you've got my vote. So guys, he needs volunteers. He needs door knockers. It's effective.
Yeah.
Out of all the people that I've engaged with, and I'm telling you this, about 9 out of 10 aren't home.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're just not.
Well, that's about right.
But of the 10% more or less that have engaged with me, with the exception of the one who was a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat and wouldn't even give me the time of day.
Yep.
And the one who was a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, but he called himself a progressive, can't remember the fancy term. But at any rate, he and I engaged for 30 minutes. I didn't change his mind. He didn't change my mind. But I found somebody who calls himself progressive that you could have an intelligent conversation with. And as soon as this is over, I'm calling him and his wife and getting together with him for coffee. Because I just can't believe this and I want more of it. But anyway, you've got the walkbook. You know what's working behind the door. If there's not a sign-up sheet here, I'll bet you Bill can get you one. Please.
There's a sign-up sheet here.
There's a sign-up sheet.
Give an hour a day, an hour a week, whatever you can do. And if you can't walk, if you don't want to get out in the sun and improve your tan a little bit, call the people you know. Call the people on the walk list. You got the phone numbers here, too.
I remember, when we talk about what could you do if you like my message, you could sign up to be a volunteer to knock doors for us and actually talk to Republican voters. And I remember when I ran for the state Senate the first time, my campaign team said, okay, you got to spend like a year knocking on people's doors and just asking for their vote. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to do what? I'm going to just knock on their door and tell them I'm a politician? And I'm going to say that I'd like their vote, and they're like, yeah, just it'll be fine. Just go do it. I remember the very first time I would go, I was kind of anxious, like, man, they're going to think I'm trying to sell them vacuum cleaners or something. They're going to slam the door in my face. And so I remember the first time I ended up knocking 30,000 doors. I've knocked 30,000 doors in my entire political time. I've done this a ton of doors. And I realized the first door I went up to, I knocked on the door, and this gal answers the door, and she says, yes. And I said, oh, I'm Bill Igel. I'm running to be your state senator, and I just want to let you know I'm a veteran small business owner and was in your neighborhood. Thought I would check to see what's on your mind. And I was like cringing, like, she's going to yell at me. And she goes, oh, well, let me tell you what I've been thinking about, because I'm angry about a lot of few things. She came out and talked to me for like 20 minutes. And then I realized that it's not like you have to have a speech prepared. And I probably, of all those doors I've knocked on, I probably had the door slammed in my face less than, I can count on one hand the number of times people have slammed the door in my face. Because people are engaged. Remember, when I say you're not alone, you're doing this, you're here tonight, you're frustrated, you're disappointed, you're angry. All those folks that you're knocking on the door, they are too. And when they see someone's at their door that's just like them, just asking them for support, they actually embrace that. It was one of the most surprising things that I've seen in politics, and I had more interaction. And I remember, so my first race, we had this, I was running against a state rep, and it was an incumbent state rep that wanted to be the senator, and I was running against her. I had no name ID, right? And this state rep had a bunch of name ID in my district, right? It was very well known. Where have you heard that before? Like in the governor's race. Like I never quoted that. It has a lot of name ID, right? But this person who I was running against in the state senate had so much name ID. Her last name was Zare. I think we have some Zares in this county, by the way. But her last name was Zare. Very common name in St. Charles County. In fact, it was so common. Zare is such a common name that Zare is my wife's maiden name. And so we actually had Amanda's parents wearing Zares for Igel on t-shirts. It was great. I knocked so many doors and we made so much progress that even though I started with zero name ID at that local level, even for a state senate seat, before we spent any money on that race, I was already winning the race because I had so many good conversations just like what you're describing. So if you're willing, that's my spiel for if you're willing to volunteer to knock doors, please do it. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Bill, I'm just simply going to make a comment, and that is the fact that I actually respect somebody more if they don't use a prepared speech, if they just talk from the heart. I think that's part of the problem in politics, and it's particularly a problem on the federal level when you see a presidential speech or whatever, and that is they have a prepared speech already written out for them.
Mm-hmm. And it's written for them, too.
Yeah, my attitude is why don't you just speak from the heart? And I think that's what's so important, you know, about the conversation that we're having here tonight, you know. You know, that all these prepared speeches, to me, it's just phony.
Yeah, the speechifying portion of tonight, like, I'm trying to get you guys rallied up and excited, but the speeches, a lot of the things I'm saying in the speeches are things that you've actually heard before. The best interaction you can have is actually during this and the question and answer, where people can just ask me whatever's on their mind, and they can see how I mean. So... Absolutely. Other questions? All right, we're back to you. I remember you asking questions at the last one, actually, now that's jogging my memory. I used to be this guy. I was always the guy in the back of the room asking questions.
I apologize to everybody if I'm getting too far in the weeds. But I'm going to go back to Stephen's question about the farmland and buying it. I'm personally conflicted because I would rather Bayer, German company, buy farmland in Missouri to do seed testing, pesticide testing, than Bill Gates to buy it and fucking grow, pardon my French, I'm sorry, grow bugs that we're going to have to grow and eat for food.
Yeah,
so,
policy.
I don't know how we handle, how we...
The policy that I'm talking about, and by saying that I want Missourians or Americans to own our farmland versus foreign countries, this is not a contest of whether or not I can think of an American that I like less than somebody foreign, right? I mean, there's a lot of foreigners that I would trust even before a guy like Bill Gates, even because he's an American, right? I can think there's a lot of people I would trust owning our land before I'd trust Joe Biden, quite frankly. So that's not what really the impetus behind the policy. The impetus behind the policy is that in And overwhelmingly, I think overwhelmingly, it's better for us collectively as an American society to have Americans owning our farmland. So I want to put a restriction on foreign ownership because, you know, there's a, if you try to restrict just one or two countries, like everybody says China, we're going to restrict China. China's a low-hanging fruit right now. Everybody knows we shouldn't have China buying our land. Everybody knows we shouldn't have Russia buying our land. But what, you know, you mentioned Germany. Well, Germany, that's Klaus Schwab, and the World Economic Forum is German, right? I wouldn't want him. So, but I can go through every foreign country and find bad actors where I think that we should restrict that foreign ownership. And I see it as not a matter of government telling you who you can and cannot sell your land to, but I think it's a national security issue that we should protect our farmland to a certain degree. So, yes, there are bad actor Americans. There's a lot of bad actor Americans, but I think this is a standard that's easy to understand. It's not a catch-all to prevent every bad actor from potentially buying our farmland, but I think it takes care of a lot of them. Yes, sir?
You guys talking about foreign countries buying farmland, there is only one company in the United States, cement company, that's owned by the United States. That's Blue Circle. All the rest of them are owned by foreign companies. And they own the rock quarries.
What company is that?
Cement company that makes cement.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Lafarge is the largest. They're from France.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Yes, sir.
Talking about business, this is a today question. In any way that you can help us, I'm Commissioner Gaston County. We've been working with a company that wants to come here, and they're wanting to invest $30 million upfront cost to start a business. It's a primary business. They've got plans for in 5 years to invest another $30 million, hire anywhere from 75 to 100 people. I have contacted all my representatives, all my senators. You're not my senator, I guess, in this area, so you wasn't contacted.
But I'm one.
But how can we get help as a county to give more incentives? You know, I'm not talking about money or anything, because we've given them all we can, tax breaks, tax incentives, and everything else, to get them to come here, because I'm pro-business, because if you don't have businesses, you're not going to have workers, so it helps the county. So
what reasons have they given you that they wouldn't want to come?
Nobody's contacted me back.
I mean, like the company in particular. Have they given you any reason to think?
No, but we're in competition with Florida and Texas right now. We're still in running. They actually have a contract on property that I helped them secure, but until they get the best deal, they're not interested in coming here until they can get better deal than what Florida or Texas is offering. So
Florida,
is there
Texas?
Anything that you know over? Who can I contact to find out if there's any help?
So we actually do more incentive type programs through the Department of Economic Development down in Jefferson City per capita than any other state in the union. So we can get you the contact information down there, and there's local Department of Economic Development, departments of economic development that can kind of walk you through the different programs, because there's a ton of them. But actually, this is actually a real world great example, because you're talking about, you named two states, Florida and Texas.
Right.
What do Florida and Texas not have that we have? Personal property tax. Income tax. Think about it. You're competing against two states where if that company comes here, 5 cents of every dollar is going to be taken from them from the state. If they go to Florida or Texas, 0 cents of every dollar. And if they make, is it a manufacturing company?
Yes.
Okay, so
it's
they're
starting
gonna,
out as primers.
Okay.
And they've already got a 2-year contract with the federal government of sales.
Yep.
So they're a guaranteed business to start up to go.
So when they bring, they're going to have equipment in this manufacturing
Absolutely.
Plant. They're going to pay personal property tax on that. So when Missouri has tried to overcome the disadvantage, the very real disadvantage that you are doing a fantastic job articulating right now, because you're saying to yourself, wow, I have to bleed and scrape and put together a whole bunch of incentives to overcome the natural advantages that Florida and Texas have over me, right? I mean, that's you're trying to overcome the fact that they're going to, if they come here, every machine they buy, they're going to have to pay personal property tax on every single year into eternity. If they come here, they're going to have to pay income taxes, and they're going to have to pay sales taxes here that are pretty much the same as those other two states, right? We actually, the incentive programs that we have in the Department of Economic Development, per capita, we do more of those incentive programs than any other state in the union, almost $1 billion of those type of incentive programs. My push to you is that the Missouri I'm talking about is going to get rid of personal property tax and income taxes, and that is what's going to put you on the map. Not just, and actually, not just this county, every county in the state. Now, I know that doesn't help you today, because you're trying, you're at such a disadvantage right now, which is the disadvantage that every county is facing right now, right? Every single county is facing the disadvantage and the reality that you're talking about. And also, you know what another disadvantage is that you have, that they'll have if they choose Missouri, is that our state population is not growing. Where are they going to get the workforce from? I mean, how many jobs?
75 to begin with, and in 5 years, 75 to 100 more.
Where are they going to get those? Expand. Where are they going to get those 75 jobs from?
Don't deport them.
Well,
but no, because think about this is actually, this is a fantastic conversation, because think about it. You have a manufacturing company that comes in, it's got 75 positions open, but the population of Missouri isn't changing. It's the same as it was 25 years ago, which means that, let's say they come to this area and they find 75 individuals in this county that can fill those positions, maybe in the county next door or an adjacent county. Guess what? We just opened up 75 holes in other businesses in those counties, because the population is the same. It's a closed system. It's the same number of workers that are available in Missouri. Missouri's not growing, and because it's not growing, every time you open a new business, you hire an employee, you're just creating a hole somewhere else. And so the state as a whole can't make any progress. Look at Texas and Florida. They've got millions of people moving to those new states, right? Millions, which provides jobs and innovation, investment, capital. Their property values are going up, because the wages are going up and the businesses are being successful down there. You, right now, you've just described the losing battle that Missouri is fighting right now. Because we persist, and so when folks ask, when I hear local collectors, and they're saying, oh my gosh, what are we going to do if we get rid of personal property tax? I'm thinking about this story right here. What are we going to do if we don't get rid of personal property tax? You're going to be fighting a losing battle. I'm pro-business too. I run a small business. We can't thrive in this state when we're competing against the Floridas and Texas, and there's no coincidence that those are the two states that you mentioned. There's no coincidence.
We have got the incentives. We have a Gascade Valley Enterprise Zone, which we give those incentives, tax breaks and tax abatements for up to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we
on property
get
taxes.
On property taxes, mm-hmm. and on I don't know about personal property tax, I'm not sure on that.
I think it's on regular property tax.
But
yeah.
We give those incentives, but that's still not enough to
still not enough.
Come here. So are you saying that if we don't have the workers, there's no use trying to get these jobs here?
No, not at all. Actually, I think that you're proposing a system where you're saying, and I think you kind of said this, although I don't think you realized it. You said, if we attract these businesses here and create the jobs available, then people will come to our area to fill those jobs.
That's what we're hoping.
That it doesn't work like that. It's opposite. You create the people and the businesses follow the people. So in Florida and Texas, people are moving to those states. And when they move to those states, naturally, they bring their investment opportunities, their innovation, they're moving. Look at St. Charles County, like even this county. Look at St. Charles County where I'm from. It's growing. People are coming to St. Charles County, and they're bringing their investment, their lives, their families with them. And that is what creates economic growth and opportunity. But if your population isn't growing.
But our population is growing. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Our population is growing, but if you don't have something to attract them, why would they want to come here? If there's a job here, they maybe will come here.
I think it's backwards. If everybody's coming to Missouri, not just the county, because look what's happening in St. Louis City. It's shrinking. St. Louis County is shrinking. The people that you're gaining right now, for the most part, are just coming from St. Louis or moving further out of the area. So again, when you have a job opening that opens up, if you have 75 job openings and they actually get in a closed system, if you actually find those 75 workers, which is a huge problem for employers, you've just opened up 75 holes in other businesses elsewhere. And I think that those businesses, this business is a good example, is going to say, hey, am I going to go to Missouri where we're struggling to find those workers and it's a closed system and it's not growing, or am I going to go to Florida and Texas where not only do we have a growing, thriving economy, but I also don't have to pay personal property tax and I don't have to pay income taxes. And by the way, the incentives that you talk about, the real estate incentives, right? Because I've seen, we do this all the time in St. Charles even, where we have cities and counties offering tax abatements for 20 years on the real estate. You don't have to pay you don't have to pay property taxes for 20 years on the real estate if you come to your business. But guess what? If you say, if you have a fire department, they're still going to provide services to that building, right? The police is still going to provide security for the area that that building provides in. So guess who's going to make up the difference when you give a special benefit to one company to get that one company here? Guess who's actually making up the rest of the difference? Everybody else, right? That's why I've never been a fan of incentive programs that try to benefit small groups of people or singular businesses. I'm a guy that believes in economic growth for everybody. I want to get rid of personal property tax for everybody. In fact, when we talk about eliminating personal property tax revenues, I can tell you that in St. Charles, St. Peter's, which does a ton of these type of programs, maybe if we just stop giving tax breaks for the businesses to come here, we could actually lower the tax burden for everybody, and then people would start moving to our state again. I mean, look at Illinois. Illinois is losing people faster than we're losing people. They have such a drain on human capital that there's no way that they can recover. When I was running my business, I used to say, in the realm of business, if you have sales, everything else can be fixed. If you have a product or service that somebody wants, then there's no production problem generally that can undo you. In geopolitics, if you have population growth, everything else can be fixed. If you have people coming to your area, your county or your state, everything else can be fixed, because when they come to your area, they're bringing their investment, they're bringing their innovation, they're bringing their human capital, that most precious of resources. But Missouri is stagnant overall. Not that your county's growing, St. Charles is growing. St. Charles is the fastest growing county in the state. Great for St. Charles. But from a statewide perspective, it's stagnant. St. Louis City has lost 1.5% of its population just in the past 12 months. There's no economic, of course there's crime there. There's no economic opportunity there. People have no alternatives, and they can't escape the city, and then the mayor doesn't like to put bad guys in jail. My proposal is imagine a world where instead of you having to say, we're going to give you this benefit, we're going to give you that benefit, we're going to give you this tax break, and here's a package we're going to put together if we want you to come to our county. Imagine a world where you don't have to do that anymore. So many people are already coming to your county that they're coming to you saying, we're coming, all right, we wanted to be in Missouri, here we are, we got our business, where can we be in your county? And you don't have to say, I'm going to give you a tax abatement, but the rest of the population is going to have to kind of cover the hole for the next 20 years. But because we don't have personal property taxes, because we don't have income taxes, they're going to naturally come to you. You right now are fighting the losing battle of Missouri economic policy. This is the trap that was started long before you even thought about politics, long before I think it started shortly after I was born in the late 70s. We're suffocating as a state because there's too much of the incentives going on for particular businesses that are draining the population even further to overcome those special breaks, and the overall population just not growing. You're never going to be able to catch up, as you said. Even though you've offered them all the local incentives, and yes, there's some more state incentives, you're not going to be able to compete with Florida and Texas. You can't compete. That's why the scoreboard of whether or not we're winning or losing that struggle is the population. Our population is slightly shrinking. Those populations are exploding. They're winning handily. And for if that business calls you tomorrow and says, we've made the decision, we're coming to Gascony, for every one of those, every moment like that where we win one of those battles, we're losing a dozen of them. Because we can't compete.
But if you have a company that comes in and sets up and they're paying some taxes somewhere, so having that, how's that hurting the other people? Because you're getting a little bit of something from them, so you're not losing it. Everybody else is not paying their taxes.
Well, think about the taxes they'd be paying. They'd be paying, if they don't have to pay property taxes, they would be paying sales tax, right? They would be paying income taxes, right? Those are going to go to the state. Those aren't actually going to come back to your fire department.
What about the workers there? They're going to be hopefully living here, coming here, living here, spending money here, housing, fuel, food.
So you're going I would argue that you're going down the rabbit hole of trying to make that decision as government. So you're here. You are as a county commissioner, right?
Right.
Trying to say, okay, what business can I incentivize to come here, and you know, how much are they going to pay in taxes, and where are we going to get these jobs from? I want to free you from all of that. You shouldn't have to do that.
That's not helping me now.
So yes, I acknowledge. What I'm doing to help. Even though it's a losing battle, I want to help you win that losing battle, and that's why we can connect you to the Department of Economic Development and get you those resources. Long term, though, I want you to think beyond that. I want to set up an environment in the state where you are not at such a disadvantage. That's ultimately my end goal.
So I would just offer Elon Musk is building a multi-billion-dollar AI supercomputer place in Memphis. In Memphis, but it's Tennessee, no income tax, no personal property tax. So even Memphis is being St. Louis and Kansas City, and you know, it's Memphis, right? I mean, if it was Nashville, okay, but Eastern Tennessee has a terrible reputation, mm-hmm. and they're getting a huge investment
right.
that we can't get because of this environment.
Yes. All right. Well, is that it?
Yeah, right. Take the couple that got their hands raised.
Oh, we'll go ahead and okay. Call. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, one last question here real quick, and or comment, actually, more than a question. That is the fact that my problem with this incentive stuff is it's government picking winners and losers.
In prison.
Is where I run into a problem with it.
Stuff like that.
And what you're proposing is government getting out of the business of picking the winners and losers is the way I get it, and I'm solidly behind getting rid of personal property tax and any property taxes we can get rid of, because as long as you can be taxed for it, you don't own it. I keep driving right. that point home. You're paying a yearly rent. And every time I get my property tax bill from my house here, I just seethe with aggravation because, you know, the fact that the house is paid off, but yet I'm still forced to pay yearly rent, or the sheriff can come to my door and boot me out of it 3 years later if I don't pay it.
Yep.
There's something wrong with that picture. If it's supposed to be my property, then it's my property. If not, then let's quit dickering around and pretending like it is. Then.
Somebody buy us out, and then you'll own the headache too.
Yep. Two more questions over there. Yep.
With the petition process, why don't the big IT reform put it in the petition process so it gets here again?
Yep, sir, say it again.
With the petition process as it is now, why not form a group and put it on the ballot?
You could, but it's too late. It's too late to do that because there's not enough time between now and the report. But yeah, you could do that. Typically, to get something, to collect the signatures without a tremendous amount of out-of-state special interest money is very difficult. It's happened, but it's pretty rare. We had gotten the initiative petition bill down to the one-yard line in the legislature. We were so close and we dismissed it. All the difference in the world could have been the governor that would have weighed in and said, get this done or we're going to be back in special session. But it could be done, as you described.
I think the last one, Ron Tezone,
Yes, there's a big cost. It's difficult to do.
Yep, more questions in the corner.
The only thing I was liking, Jared over here was talking about was a 20-year tax-free thing. Mm-hmm. I used to work in Washington, Missouri, and they had a factory at Harman Kardon. They make car stereos, and I don't know what car manufacturer.
Cassette decks.
They gave them some type of city of Washington. And as soon as that was over, I don't know how many people they employed, but it was quite a few people. And as soon as that tax thing was over, they bailed out. And I don't say they do that there, but a lot of times these companies, they'll just leave.
Yeah.
And you know, all those people, I don't know, 200 people, 300 people, well, they were just out of a job.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that's going to happen to those guys.
We're talking, your question has to do with the immediate term. Right now, you have a deal on the table. Obviously, by the time I've sworn in as governor, gets rid of personal property tax, changes the budget for next year, you see what I'm saying? I get that. I'm with you. I understand your question is narrowly tailored to the immediate. You're talking about the long term as well. And I would say that over the long term, if I can get rid of personal property tax and income taxes, then maybe they won't leave.
They may
but you see what I'm saying? So long term, I think that's the solution. So Brandon is up here. He's giving me the hook. I want to say thank you to everybody who's been here tonight. This is my eighth event and the first one that had Bill Eichel cookies, so thank you so much. Let's go, Missouri. Thanks, everybody.
I see we got some. Yes. Thanks, everybody, for coming again. And I see we got several people signed up.
Nice to see you. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Sherry from Senator Eichel's office.
Oh, it's so great to meet you.
How are you?
There's three out there. You guys
have had such great conversation when I talked to you on the phone at one time.
Excellent. Yes, that's good.
That being said,
how are you doing?
I would like Shorty, would you mind discussing us in prayer,
please? I'm Sherry. I'm Senator Eichel's staff.
Yes. It's real good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Yeah, I enjoy our conversations. You're so down to earth and so easy to talk to, and you're such a blessing. So thank you. You betcha. Absolutely.
We thank you for the blessings that was given us here in the heartland of the United States. Thank you for the message that has been presented for us that we may turn our government around and find peace and harmony once again. Lord, we're grateful for all the abundance thou hast given us and for all the great things with the leaders thou hast presented us with. Lord, we ask thou will soften those whose hearts are stiffened, and they may turn unto thee for knowledge and love. Lord, we thank thee. Ask that thou will bless us as we travel home this evening with safety. And share this message with our family. In the Savior's name, I say, Jesus Christ. Amen.